All right, let's have an AA meeting. My name is Chris Ward. I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual and our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org desperately in need will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, "Yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing." So, I also get the honor tonight of introducing our speaker. She came, Tinsley played a show here at the Variety, and she came with us and came out to have dinner with us, and we had a really good time. I went down to the front to go down there and boogie and shake my ass, shake my butt a little bit, and out there dancing, I feel these hands come behind me and wrap around me. I was like, "Ooh, who's that?" I turn around, it's Priscilla. Man, we danced for like two or three songs. It was fantastic. We had the best time. But I met her over at Clark's, not all that long ago, probably about 6 months ago. And within 10 minutes of meeting her, I said, "Will you marry me?" And she said, "Well, of course, Donna, but I got to do something first." And this is why I know we're going to have a good speaker tonight. She said, "I got to talk to my sponsor first." So, with that, I will give you Priscilla and Priscilla, there she is.
Quite an introduction. Let me get this started because Tim said 40 minutes, so I want to make sure I follow the rules. We started 3 minutes late, but I don't want to go over. I'm sort of glad to be here. Shannon, you survived. Thank you for that colorful reading of how it works. I enjoyed it. My name is Priscilla, and I definitely am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is March 3rd, 1981, and I'm a member of the Peachtree Parkway Group in Norcross. And it was I've been a member ever since. There was seven of us that founded that group, and I don't even know how many years ago it was. But anyway, I've been around AA all of my life. My mother on October 3rd would have had 60 years in this program, and she died 23 years ago with 37 years in the program. And so I knew about AA, and I still had to walk the path that I had to walk. I was very blessed at the age of 13 that my mother, very wise, knew I needed help because I already had some alcoholic tendencies, my character defects and everything. And she drove me over to St. Teresa Catholic Church because she heard they were going, Al-Anon was going to start an Alateen group. So I went to the very first Alateen group in Memphis, Tennessee at the age of 13. And that, I didn't want to go. I was crying in the car, "Please don't make me go. Please, please, please," you know. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me because I was a late 60s, early 70s child, and it kept me off drugs. And that was a big deal, drugs and drinking. And I didn't have my first drink until I was 18. My brother, my older brother, gave me a beer, and it was the first time I've ever had a drink. And I really didn't see what the attraction was. And at that time, I hadn't crossed that invisible line into alcoholism. I could take it or leave it. And I did things that, you know, late teenagers, early 20s did. I partied a lot, went to a lot of dances, went to nightclubs, had a blast. Sometimes drank one drink all night long. And it was okay. And met a guy, met him through my mother. He didn't have a lot of time in the program. I think he had less than 30 or 60 days. I should have known better, but my heart pounded when I saw him, and my heart soared, and he was such a good-looking guy. And I do not suggest anybody do this. I met him in April, and we married in August. And he stayed sober until that Thanksgiving, and then he had to go out on a tear, and he finally sobered up in February. But I was not drinking alcoholically even then. We went to a lot of AA. He was involved in the young people's in AA, and I can tell you how long ago this was. He was the registration chairman of the 18th International Conference of Young People in AA, and I think they're celebrating like 40 or whatever. He would have had 43 years in February. But we just hung around with all the young people, and I didn't find it necessary to start drinking alcoholically. So you're not going to hear a lot of drunkalogue from me because I've been around AA all my life. Well, my husband got an opportunity to go to Lexington, Kentucky with a really good job. And I'm from Memphis, Tennessee, and I've never lived anywhere but Memphis. And we moved to Lexington, Kentucky, and it floored me. I have never been more lonely and out of my comfort zone. And no family, no friends, and trying to get established in AA up there. And I got a job at a laboratory as assistant purchasing manager. And I had always played women's softball. I caught for several years. And so I joined the women's softball team. And after every game, we went out for pizza and beer. Now, at that time, my husband, what did he have? 3 or 4 years of sobriety. And it was okay. He didn't participate. He was the coach. But somewhere after being in Lexington, Kentucky, 4 or 5 months, I became a daily drinker. And from a daily drinker, I had to drink. I couldn't wait to get home from work and start tying it on. Well, we were in Lexington 18 months, and we moved here in March of 1978. And when we moved here in March of 1978, I was a full-blown alcoholic. I had to drink every day. I couldn't survive without drinking. And my husband just tolerated it. Usually men do not tolerate women that drink. That's the reason why you have such a high divorce rate of women in the program and not men. Us women hang in with you guys. You're sorry asses sometimes. Excuse my language. I was supposed to cuss. I'm sorry. So anyway, but men do not hang in with a woman drunk. But he was trying to practice his program, and I'm drinking. And we move here, and where does a good practicing alcoholic go to work? Peachwood Hospital. As assistant purchasing agent at Peachwood Hospital. And loved the A&D unit, because I would go over there every morning so hungover, and Joe Crosby, the nurse over there, she would give me some vitamins and some aspirin to tide me over where I get my day going and where I could go out at lunch and get a drink and steady my nerves. And I didn't know how to drive down 285 without drinking. How do you drive in rush hour traffic without drinking? You've got to stop and get some beers to tide you over until you can get home and get the real stuff. And I love bourbon over ice. And I messed up big time. I had decided that in 1981, after all this drinking, and it was taking a toll on me physically, mentally, and there was no spiritual part of I didn't have anything spiritual. I gave up on God a long time before that. And I made a mistake of stealing from Peachford. And they did not like that. Not only did they fire me, they had me arrested. Can you imagine my brutal alcoholic soul? And then they took me down to DeKalb County Jail. It's not that big, beautiful high-rise they got up there now. That was they had like a castle, a stone castle, and it was filthy and it was dirty. And I had never even gotten a ticket in my entire life. I was a good girl. And here I was in DeKalb County Jail. And my husband came up there and he tried to post bail. Well, God was trying to get me ready. Do you know that DeKalb County recognized at that time 5 bail bondsmen. And that was it. They only accepted bail from those 5 companies. And nobody would post bail for me. God was getting me ready. The matrons couldn't believe that I was still there and they had to take me upstairs. Well, that was an eye-opening experience. I got put in a cell that was designed for 25 women and there was about 45 of us. They gave me a mat and I got to sleep under the picnic tables. And that first night, there was a lot of he-ing and she-ing going on, and there was nothing but women up there. Scared the holy crap out of me. I never experienced anything like that. So, now I had given up drinking on Wednesday. I got arrested on Thursday. And Friday, still couldn't make bail. And I called my mother, and she was director of a women's halfway house over in Mississippi and was good friends with the lieutenant governor. And he wired over $250,000 for my bail. DeKalb County sent it back to one of the 5 bail companies. They sent it back, and I'm calling Mother Collect long distance. She says, "All right, let's cut to the chase. What did you really do? We just got $250,000 back, and they're not going to accept it. What did you really do?" She didn't believe what I was telling her. And I said, "Oh, Mama, I promise you I only did this." And so, anyway, late Saturday morning, after I'd been arrested on Thursday afternoon, my husband again asking the bondsman, "Please bond out my wife." And one of them says, "Sure." Hey, I was ready. So I had slept under that table for 2 nights and been around there for 2 days. I was dirty. I stunk. Scared to even go to the bathroom. And still wearing the same clothes that I wore on Thursday. And got out. I got in the car. My husband says, "Please, the first thing you do, go shower. You smell." So I did, and that was on Saturday. And on Sunday, we usually went to, and it's no longer in existence, Parkway Hospital down in Decatur. And we went to, I think it was the 6:00 Family Anonymous meeting, and then everybody went down to the cafeteria, and we had dinner, and then we had a speaker meeting at 8:00. And so my husband asked me if I wanted to go. And I says, "I don't want anything to do with AA." And he said, "Well, I'm going to go on." For our next door neighbors were in the program. She was an alcoholic and he was an Al-Anon. So he rode with them. And I laid there for about an hour, got up and decided, oh, what the hell, I'll go. So I'm looking for my car keys. I got dressed and I was looking for my car keys. Well, I drove a Buick sedan, very conservative. My husband drove a Chevrolet Caprice that had, is it called, glass packs? And when you turned it on, it went boom, 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 boom. I hated that car. Could not find my car keys, but there sat his keys, and he didn't have my car keys on it. So I'm driving in Decatur, trying to find this hospital, didn't know where it was, and I had to stop at the DeKalb County police officer and ask him where it was, and I was just like 2 blocks from it. So I went to the meeting, and poor boy Rice was speaking, and sitting there, and they started giving out the chips. And I had no intention of picking up a chip, but God decided that I was ready. So Harold said something to my husband, and when he leaned over to reply to Harold, his knee hit my leg, and they says, "Did anybody want a white chip?" And I popped up, and I says, "I do." I thought my husband was going to have a heart attack, because he had 7 years in the program at that time. And here I was finally, I guess, going to get sober. So I went to Avondale Estates on that Monday and talked to the women over there. And I says, "How do you do it? How do you stay sober?" And they said, "Don't drink. Go to meetings. Get a sponsor." And I went, "Yeah, I know. But how do you stay sober? Don't drink." You know? And then on Tuesday, we went to Clarkston, which became my home group. And it averaged anywhere around 100, 150 people back then in 1981. And it was a big, huge group. And a lot of the women with, you know, 5 or 10 years more than me, they were so gracious and kind to put their hand out and love me when I couldn't love myself. And they says, "Come back." And at Clarkston, I got the secret password, how to stay sober. They told me. It was about damn time. Don't drink, go to meetings, and get a sponsor. They added, "Get a sponsor." That was the secret password, get a sponsor. So I picked out a lady, and I started on the path of, hopefully, sobriety. I picked up that one white chip. I have not picked up another since, thank God, because I don't think I'd ever make it back, because I'm such a dishonest person to myself. And I started working the steps, talking to the women in the program. And at that time, at Clarkston, it was one little room that's about a fourth of this size. And we would do all the readings, and then we would take all the chairs and make circles, and it'd be about 10 or 11 of us in a circle. And right over here was another set of circle. And you know, at first I could hear everything that was going on in all the circles, but then I started hearing just what was going on in my circle, listening. And because I wanted sobriety, they talked about I was a dying person. Physically, I was all beat up. Emotionally and mentally, I hated myself. I loathed myself. I had no self-respect. I drank myself up. And I had given up on God, because He would never help me when I was drinking. He just let me stay in my mess. And I can't tell you how I prayed on Thursday and Friday to get out of jail, and He just nothing. He left me there. So I really didn't trust in this God. And my sweet sponsor told me that in the mornings when I woke up, that she wanted me to ask God for help to stay sober, and she wanted me at night to thank Him. And I went, "Yeah, I'm in control. not the Scott. And she said, well, how's that been going for you? Look where you are. Look at the mess you're in. And I went, okay, if I have to. And she says, you have to. So in the morning when I'd wake up, I went, yeah, God, if you're up there, yeah, if you're really watching over me, help me not pick up a drink today. Yeah, amen. And then at night I go, yeah, I know I kept myself sober, but thank you for keeping me sober. Now, of course I wasn't arrogant. And cool. I was full of resentment and anger. I came in a very angry woman. My husband told me later, he said he would look across the room, and he would look at me and he'd go, why don't you just die, bitch? You know. At that one time, we were really friends. But he was my biggest supporter and his biggest cheerleader, and he wanted me to stay sober. And he was trying to guide me. And my sponsor finally says, Gary, do me a favor. Stay out of Priscilla's program. He said, but I don't want her to mess up. I don't want her to drink. And I said, and she said, stay out of her program. So he did. And one of the good things I could say that Family Anonymous did for us on Sundays at that 5 o'clock meeting is I learned from them to give him the right to be who he was. And he learned to give me the right to be who I am. And we took a marriage that was had gotten to where we were sleeping in separate rooms, that we became friends again, and we started rebuilding our marriage. And when he passed away 9 years ago, we had 37 years of marriage. I'm sorry. But I hung in there. And at Clarkston, for the newcomers, there was two jobs you could do. You could wash ashtrays after you helped set up the chairs. And then you could wash coffee cups. No coffee making. God knows, don't mess with an alcoholic's coffee. And then when they found out I didn't drink coffee, which it was hard for them to believe I really was an alcoholic, that I drank hot tea, they didn't want me anywhere near the coffee pot. So I was the chair setter-upper, and I was the ashtray, setting all the ashtrays out. And at that time, we didn't use styrofoam. We used real coffee cups. And I got to wash coffee. Well, after a little bit over 2 years of sobriety, we moved out to Gwinnett County. And when we moved to Gwinnett County in 1983, there was Norcross Thursday Night's group, George Montgomery's group, two nights a week, and a real scary place that I didn't really like, and it was called the Gwinnett Room. And the reason why I didn't like it and it scared me was there was a bunch of good old boys, and they wore boots and jeans, and they had their cigarettes rolled up in their T-shirts, or they chewed tobacco, and they were real scary. They were just good old boys. There was nothing scary about them, but they scared me. And I told my husband, I don't want to go to Gwinnett Room. So we would drive back up to Clarkston to go to meetings. And we finally got tired of that, and we heard about a couple of people wanting to start a group, and it was Peachtree Corners. So there was four or five of us couples when we started Peachtree Corners. And it was on Monday and Friday night. And we would average 75 to 125 people every Monday and Friday nights. And it was wonderful. And guess what I did for service work? I washed ashtrays. and washed coffee cups. I mean, coffee mugs. I was still doing service work with four years of sobriety. And then I started progressing up to being secretary, then treasurer, GSR, grapevine rep, and still wasn't allowed to make coffee. Because when that group heard I didn't drink coffee, and they let me make it one time. Oh, my God. If you had heard the complaints, because who made this weak? This is like you can see through it. Well, I was trying to be conservative and not use a lot of coffee grounds. I didn't know. That was my one cent of coffee making. Because we had these great big urns that made like 40 or 50 cups. I don't know what it was, but they were huge. And you had to get there 45 minutes, an hour to 45 minutes to get the coffee going because it took them a while to brew. But that's how I started staying sober one day at a time. Don't drink. Go to meetings. And unfortunately, after 2.5, almost 3 years of sobriety, my sponsor passed away. And I didn't have a sponsor for a while. Probably about 3 or 4 months. Of course, I was looking for the perfect sponsor. Anil had taken me through the steps and had given me such wise, wonderful advice to help me stay sober. And I met this lady, and immediately I knew I wouldn't like her because she said she was from New York City. Well, I'm prejudiced. I'm sorry. I have a prejudice, and I don't like Yankees from New York City. So she said, I hear, and she heard this from my husband, I hear you don't have a sponsor. I think you ought to have me as your sponsor. And I went, what? It was the best thing that ever happened to me. She's been my sponsor for 30 years. And she's getting ready to celebrate this year 50 years in the program. She's a wonderful gal. And she's given me great wisdom and advice to help me stay sober one day at a time. But I just, you know, I started sponsoring ladies. I did the steps several times. God, I thought once I did them, why do you have to do another 4-step? Why do I have to do another 9th? Well, guess what I discovered? It was people I had left off that I hadn't even thought about, that I had hurt. And I had to do another 9th step. And thank God for step 10, because I always put my mouth and say the wrong thing. And I hate to make amends. I hate to tell somebody I was wrong and I'm sorry. But thank God I've got the 10th step. But I've discovered, learning from my sponsor, that if you've got a situation that you're perplexed and it's really driving you bonkers, guess what you can do? You can do a 4-step on it. Wow. A 4th and 5th step on something that's bothering you that you might drink over or you have a resentment. So I learned to use the 4th step for life situations. And you know what? When my husband died 9 years ago, what I did, AA saved my life when I picked up my first white chip. AA saved my life again. And I started going to 2 meetings a week. One thing I looked at was, it scared me. And I said, what if I don't have any program? Have I been riding his coattails? You know? And then I had to start, and I talked to my sponsor and started thinking about it. Yes, I've done the steps several times. Yes, I've gone to meetings. Yes, I do service work. Yes, I do have a program. And yes, I can stay sober. So what I did to protect my sobriety is do 2 meetings a day. Another thing, 2 weeks after I lost my husband, I got to say this really nice, the witch that I worked for fired me. because she said I was not performing 100% and she wasn't going to put up with this crying. So she fired me, and she knew that my husband only had that little $5,000 insurance policy. I had a mortgage. I had bills. I had a truck payment, you know. But you know what? I've never missed a mortgage payment. I got that truck paid off, and I paid my bills, and I went to meetings, and God led me that whole time. And I didn't find it necessary to pick up a drink. And I used this program to support me and lift me up. And then 2 years ago, this really hurts. I lost three of my siblings in 3 months. Two unexpectedly tried to kill me when my sister died. And I told God, I can't do this. If I pick up a drink, then I don't have to hurt. I don't have to hurt. And then God gave me the second thought. And he said, I want you to call somebody. And I did. I called another lady in the program. And I didn't pick up a drink. But that liked to kill me, losing them. And then last March, I lost my fourth sibling. He died of a massive heart attack. Wasn't expecting that. I handled that one a little bit better. But, you know, I went through my mother's terminal illness with cancer and her dying, losing jobs and sobriety, and found it necessary not to pick up that first drink, and then losing family members and found it necessary not to pick up that first drink. Because you see, they say that there's three things that will happen to you if you drink. Death, get arrested, or institutions. You know, and get arrested, death, and institutions. Well, there's more than the dirt nap you take, death. Because when I was drinking, it was a living death. And I know that if I drink again, it's going to be a living death. And I don't want to put that alcohol in me. So I do everything possible to not pick up the first drink. And in the morning when I wake up and there's no, yeah, God, it's going, God, thank you for watching over me during the night. God, help me today. Do your will, not mine. Because, see, if I don't do that, I'm such a control freak. I think that I can do it myself. So I need to start off my day with saying, God, let me do your will, not mine. And with every fiber of my being, God, help me not pick up that first drink. And I mean it. Help me not pick up that first drink. And tonight when I go to bed, I'll do it like I've been doing it. I will thank God for my sobriety today. And I thank him for the simplest, smallest things that he does for me in my life. I don't know if I'll thank him for this, but I don't like giving AA talks. But he watches over me 24/7, and he's with me. And I'm going to tell you, if you're new in the program, please stay until the miracle happens, because it will happen. And I have a peace and serenity inside me that I didn't even know existed. And it's because God is in my life, and he's my constant companion. And him and I have conversations going down the road. Or like today, I was working in the yard and doing things, and I started talking to him about something that was bothering me and asking his help. So don't stop and go back out and drink and you don't get to experience the miracle. Because it's there. It's waiting for you. But you gotta do the action. You gotta do the work. You gotta do the steps. I'm sorry. It's just, I don't know of anybody that's had happy, joyous, free sobriety that didn't work the steps. You just can't do step 1 and step 12. Because in between there's a whole bunch of other stuff. And you might survive a little while on it. You might even go a couple of years on it. You know? But you're not happy. And inside you, there's a gnawing loneliness or anger. You're quick to anger. You're quick to get mad. You know, it could be somebody just does something stupid in the grocery store and you're pissed. You know? That's the way I was when I first came in. People pissed me off. Didn't they know who I was and what I was trying to do? For God's sakes, I was trying to get sober and Alcoholics Anonymous. Get out of my way. So, I was such a delightful person. You can understand my husband saying what he said across the room about me to die. Can you imagine living with somebody like that? Oh, God. God bless his soul. Thank God we became friends and we were best of buddies and we laughed all the time and we did. If you get a chance to go to conferences and roundups are the dessert of this program. Your AA meetings is the meat and potatoes. But conferences and roundups, and we have traveled all over the Southeast, and we've gone to international conferences, and we've traveled to Pennsylvania, and it's incredible. All the people that I have met over the years, and we're all family. And, you know, it's just, I need the dessert. And unfortunately, since my husband passed away, financially I wasn't able to go to conferences for a lot of years because I was just busy surviving to pay the bills, so I couldn't afford to go to AA conferences. But I'm back now trying to make some conferences, and I'm looking forward to the prepaid in October. And hopefully I'll get to go to the Atlanta Roundup in August. But hang in there if you're new in the program, and even if you're old in the program. You know, still do the same thing. Go to meetings, talk to your sponsor, talk to people in the program, and don't pick up that first drink. And you'll make it. And my mother used to say, when she picked up her 35-year chip, and they said, "How did you do it?" She says, "Well, let me think. I didn't drink and I didn't die." And when I picked up my 36-year chip this month, I didn't drink and I didn't die. And I'm going to tell you right now that I have got happy sobriety, and I'm grateful to be sober today and a member of Good Standing and Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm grateful I have my fiance sitting out there in the audience. Tim said, "I don't know how sad I am for you." You'll have to figure it out. It was sort of a consensus. But anyway. But see, you can have fun like this in this program. You can laugh. And Chris and I were talking earlier this afternoon. We were talking and I was laughing at myself, something I had said to him. And I says, "You know what? If you don't laugh at yourself, it's pretty sad." So I try to laugh at myself and I try to laugh every day. So I sort of thank you, Tim, for asking me. Let me see what my timer says here. I've got 2 minutes and 40 seconds, but I'm not going to bore you by saying things over and over again. But I'm glad you're here. I'm glad to see so many young people in here. Hang in there. There is a lot of fun to have in sobriety. I have fun that you wouldn't believe. I've been going over to TJ's Sports Bar and Grill for the last 18 years. My husband was raised in Green Bay, so you know I'm a Packer fan. Sorry. But my best friend, Jack Brusco, is a Pittsburgh Steeler, and I cheer for Pittsburgh. But it's go to baseball games. Go, you know, I'm at TJ's. I'm there for a reason, to cheer my Packers on. That's the reason why I'm in a sports bar. But I don't have a problem going to a nightclub to watch an act. I have a problem, thank you, for your wonderful show that I got to experience. And Chris was so kind to sort of take me under his wing. I was so afraid, seriously, because I was out of my comfort zone doing that. And I haven't danced in over 9 years. And I told him it took everything I could do to get out of my seat and go down there and dance to your music. You know, so I thank you for that, because I had a wonderful time that night. And you, your music touches my soul. So thank all of you for being here, and hang in there, and I'll give you the secret password. Don't drink, go to meetings, and talk to your sponsor and other people in the program. And my husband used to say this every time he shared in the meeting. I love all of you, and there's not a damn thing you can do about it. So, God bless all of you, and thank you for being patient to listen to me. Thank you.
That was excellent. That was excellent. A good story always finishes on time. A great story always finishes a couple minutes early. So thank you for a great story. That was great. How about another round of applause? That was awesome. Oh boy, Rice. I haven't heard that name in a long time. Is it Chip time? Mickey, why don't you come up and do the chip?
All right, my name is Mickey. I'm an alcoholic. And at NABA and AA in general, we have a chip system to denote your time in sobriety. White chip is the chip of surrender. If you'd like to take a white chip, quit drinking one day at a time. Come on up.
All right, thank you one and all for joining the Blue Chip Speakers meeting tonight.
If the river keep a rising, water gonna overflow. If that river keep a rising, flood water gonna overflow. Just like that old river, baby, it's my time to go. Thanks, gotta hold her on. Everything's torn apart. The bank's gonna hold.